Today is the first of a four-part series of interviews with the creators of CryptoZ. I'm going to leave the curtain a little bit on our creative process and how we make CryptoZ. Performance is an essential part of CryptoZ. Actually, it's more than that. If at any moment we didn't believe that the situation the characters were in were real, the show would completely fall apart. So I thought a good first step would be to simply ask the actors and the team. My first guest is the mesmerizing voice behind Jane Silver, the actress Fiona Sheehan. We're gonna dive deep in her creative process, how she approached voiceover and acting, and how she became an actress in the first place. So, without further ado, the mesmerizing Fiona Sheehan. I can imagine this is not an easy time for actors. All the movie and theater productions are shutting down, so how are you doing, Fiona?
I'm doing fine. I mean, it's strange for everyone, isn't it? You've just got to sort of keep calm and carry on, as they say, and stay home, stay safe, all the slogans.
I saw on Twitter that you bought yourself a sound kit.
I did, yeah. So I've not had a setup at home before. I tend to travel into studios in central London if I need to record. But, you know, given the current situation, it seemed prudent to get set up with stuff. So I've done that to the extent that I can in the space that I live in. And I haven't done any jobs from it yet, but I have recorded a couple of tests. I'm no expert, but it'll do for now.
We'll get together with Hollis and help you soundproof your room if you need. Do you feel like actors who can work from home have an advantage right now?
It's really difficult to know. I mean, in my experience, my agent was reluctant to encourage me to go out and buy kit because, you know, at the beginning of all of this, everything was so unknown that they couldn't guarantee whether they'd be able to get work for me. So I just felt like, personally, like I've got to have a horse in the race, you know? So at least if I'm set up, then if the opportunities do come, then I'm ready. I mean, in time, you know, maybe the studios will set up some sort of safe way of recording where you've got minimal contact with anyone else. And
right.
So that's been, you know, it's been worrying in that regard for sure.
So first of all, before we dive deeper, people in this podcast know you as Jane Silver, as a voice actress. But you're not just a voice actress. You're a 360 degree actress. You've done theater, films, feature films, TV shows. So my first question for you is, do you see voice acting as a side gig or a separate life?
Absolutely not. I consider it to be all part of the same craft. I guess the voiceovers, the commercial or corporate side of stuff, it feels like a slightly different branch of my career. But in terms of the voice acting, it just feels like it's a different skill set within the same career framework, you know. Like we were talking about with Jameson the other night, he was talking about how there are different skills involved when you're acting on stage from when you're on set. And it's just the same with audio drama. You know, you've got different things to think about, but you're very much still using your skill set as an actor in creating characters or creating a voice for your character. But it's just you focus things in a different way. You know, you've only got the microphone to perform to. So a bit like if you're acting on stage in front of 1,000 people, or if you're on set and your camera, the single camera is your audience. You know, you have to, with audio drama, you just direct everything to the microphone. So it's quite specific the way you have to perform, but I see it as all being part of the same wonderful craft that is acting.
Well, since we're on the topic, how does this focus kind of translate with your placement, your movements, your gestures, your body language, basically?
It's...
Or you just worry about breath?
It's tricky. A lot of it is sort of instinctive, but I would say that you use your whole body. The breath obviously is important, but then it would be if you were on stage or anything. I mean, for instance, with CryptoZ, with all of the physical stuff that we had to convey, you know, I don't know if you've got some footage lurking somewhere, but, you know, we had to, when we were climbing up mountains using ice picks and things, I was throwing my arms into it. I was, you know, you have to act it with your whole body because that comes through in your voice. So yeah, I mean, maybe I was going to say maybe you wouldn't use the lower half of your body so much, but I think you do. I think you use the whole thing.
Right. I think when you're in the position of listening, when I was working with you and I was listening, my entire focus was on your voice. All the little nuances that I could pick up or that would let me inform, so I could imagine the world a little bit more. I could be imagining, you know, the situation Jane Silver might be in. And I was wondering if that kind of like tunnel vision focus, a little bit like Marshall-like, I guess, is something you had to do as well.
You definitely have to do that, and you have to convey everything that's going on physically, emotionally, you know everything that's going on just with your voice. So you very much have to just focus in on your mic and treat it as though you're having, particularly with Crypto Zed in some of the sort of narrative sequences, as though you're having a really intimate conversation just with one person, but that person can't see your face. So you have to somehow bring your expressions into your voice. So there is a sort of an extra element there that you have to think about with voice acting, layering on something that you might do with a little look or a frown or whatever it may be, or a smile. You know, you can hear a smile in your voice as soon as you smile physically.
I can hear it right now.
Yeah, exactly. It makes a real difference. I remember that was something that I learnt way back when I just left drama school and I was recording my first voice reel. I remember the guy that recorded saying always smile, because it makes your voice so much brighter, and it really has an effect on the sound. And that sort of stayed with me ever since, particularly for commercial stuff, because they want everything to be bright and lifted, you know.
Right. I'm just curious, in theater you have, for example, and in film you have a stage and all the things at hand. And if you find yourself in a situation you want to explore an emotion or a reaction or something, there's this immediate playground you have access to run across the stage. Or how do you process those kind of instincts or information that comes to you? And is it different from other medium?
I guess it happens much more cerebrally with voice acting. You know, it all happens much more in your head, because you've got to stay with the mic. You don't have the option to, obviously you can do physical movement around the mic, but you don't have the option to run to the other side of the booth, which is probably pretty small anyway.
I'm thinking about listeners who might be interested in learning more about this craft, or, you know, actors who might want to improve their skills. You know, it might be maybe their main source of income for the time being and the next year. So I'm trying to get you to describe a little bit your process to see if there might be something for them to kind of pick on and apply for themselves.
Well, I suppose it becomes much more about, you've got to create the world within your own imagination, just as the listeners do when they're listening, except that when you're acting it, we don't have the benefit. When you're recording, you don't have the benefit of all of the beautiful layers of sound that you guys have added in post, you know. So there's a lot of imagination involved in creating that world in your own head so that you can then convey it to others. And something that was really useful when we were recording was that you, Hadrian, were always very good at sort of talking us through that imagined world before we recorded and helping us envision it. And similarly, I mean, Danielle's writing gives you so much anyway. So combined, that really helped. And then you've just got to get it all in your own mind so that you can then think, okay, right, so what's the temperature like here? What am I wearing? How am I feeling about this mission? Like, you've got to add all of the layers in there and then hope that it translates through the microphone to the listener's ear.
Yeah, it's amazing. Do you have other, like, you just mentioned costume, and I thought that was a really good one. Do you have other, like, tools in your toolbox that you like to pick up to ground yourself into a scene?
Well, it reminds me of, I remember at drama school, a note that we were given was, find the shoes that your character would wear. And once you've found the shoes that they would wear, that helps you layer in a lot more of their physicality and their character. I didn't physically choose, like, ice boots for the recording of Crypto Zed, but it's worth bearing in mind that sort of thing. And, you know, the fact that I'd probably be wearing a really big padded coat and, you know, something around my head and around my ears, and sort of trying to focus on the idea that you're really, really wrapped up against the elements, and which parts of your face would be exposed and how that might affect the way you speak or the way you breathe. And the landscape, the terrain, how we're moving physically, how the character is feeling about what's coming up and what they want to convey to the character they're speaking to and what they're wanting to hide. And so little things like that will make a difference in how you perform it. You know, if I want to reveal something to Felix Bright or sort of get his attention, I'll perform it in a very different way than if I'm sort of saying something under my breath in reaction to something he said, you know, that I'm not wanting to quite reveal what's going on in my own mind. So.
And do you typically decide it ahead of time, or did you find it on the spot? Given that I tried as much as possible to record actors live together.
In at least on the occasions where I was recording and I could hear Jameson at the other end recording the scene with me, him in LA and me in London, that will change how you perform it, potentially, because you're sort of riffing off the other actor. And if they deliver you a line in a way that you hadn't heard it when you saw it on the page, that will affect how you respond to it potentially. There's a combination of things that you prepare in advance and things that you can be open to changing or reimagining when you're in the booth.
And how would you go about translating those moments of silence that makes movies so rich, when all you have to do is just lean into silence and use facial expressions?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because obviously silence doesn't work in the same way on a microphone, because you're just getting nothing. I think there are times where you can use silence and the audience can read between the lines, but otherwise, if it's to convey a feeling or a reaction, I think probably a lot is done with breath and little sort of non-verbal noises. a non-verbal noise.
Did that feel like overacting or forcing a little bit?
I guess you could put it like that, yeah, because you're performing it in a way that you never would if someone could see you, because you have to give something extra to people when they're just listening to it. It's actually something that I suppose I kind of learned from, I don't know if I ever told you this, but my husband used to be an actor, and there's a really, really famous long-running radio drama soap in this country that he was in for a long time, called The Archers. I don't know if people know it in the States, but everyone knows it here. And so he, there would have been a time where I would listen to how he phrased things, or little noises that he and his acting colleagues in it would put in to convey something that's happening in the scene, whether it's, you know, they're picking up something heavy and you have to make a noise to convey that, or if it's just a sort of a reaction to somebody else. So that stuff is all useful, and the best thing to do is, you know, to listen to other people doing it.
There was something very striking to me as I was casting Crypto Z, to see as how much actors who are used to understate their performance on camera expect sometimes the same strategy to work in voiceover or in voice acting. And to me, it just kind of falls flat. And I don't have a lot of tips to give to actors, but if I had one, maybe it would be to not be afraid to overact or to push the boundaries, even if it feels uncomfortable in voiceover.
Absolutely, yeah. And from that point of view, it's actually, voice acting can be really freeing in that way, because, I mean, not that we all want to overact at all times otherwise, but, you know, for me, a lesson that I had to learn at drama school was that outside of voice acting, you largely, I mean, I guess that there's a difference in theatre, but you largely are cast in roles according to what you look like. Whereas with voice acting, it frees you up to play all sorts of different characters. And I think I was a bit naive when I first went to train, because I was thinking, well, you know, I love acting because I love playing lots of different characters and different voices and different physicalities and all that sort of thing. And of course, at the end of the day, as an actor, you are a product, and people are looking for a particular kind of product when they're casting things. And so I very quickly learnt that the radio drama classes we had at drama school were one of my favourite times of the week, because you could be anything again.
Right, right.
That's one of the real advantages I found. Not that I'm sort of massively different from myself and Crypto Zed in terms of my vocal quality, but the potential is there, you know? and that's why I've enjoyed voice acting so much. You know, there's so much scope for playing around and being adventurous in your performance, in a way that you probably couldn't be in other media.
You can even be a creature or a cryptid.
Yeah, exactly. Or an alien, as I was in Doctor Who once, you know? You can be anything.
Right. Maybe we'll have Jane Silver become an alien. I just wanted to track back for a minute, because you mentioned drama school a lot, and I think it was probably as important to you that film school was important to me. What was it like to be you when you got accepted into that school? And just for the record, the school that we're talking about, London Academy of Music and Dramatic Arts, is probably one of the best school in the world.
Yes, it's pretty good. London Academy of Music and Dramatic Art, yeah. I remember when I was 17, suddenly announcing to my parents over the dinner table, I've decided I'm not going to do my A-levels. I'm going to move to LA and I'm just going to, like, you know, become a star. I'm going to be discovered in LA. That's what I'm going to do. And I remember my parents sort of reacting and going, okay. And so what will you do when you get there? Well, I don't know. I'll see if I can meet some people. Okay. And there are probably quite a lot of actors in LA. Do you think there might be other people who maybe have a bit more experience or have connections, or, you know, how are you going to make this work? And so that sort of gave me pause for thought. And I thought, okay, maybe I need to measure out exactly how this plan is going to go before I just launch straight in. And my family, I don't come from an acting background. Most of my family are medical, actually. And so my dad was like, well, why don't you just think about university first and then see how you get on? So I ended up going to university and I studied English and drama. So I didn't like fully step away from the dream. I went to the University of Bristol and I had three of the best years of my life. So absolutely no regrets. And then whilst I was still at Bristol, I auditioned for drama school, and that's when I got into Lambda. And yeah, it was like the feeling of getting into your dream drama school was pretty special.
It's funny. I feel like we have similar stories.
Oh, really? Right. Interesting.
But anyway, I have so many questions. So you went to study English. Were you acting at the time?
Yeah. I mean, not professionally, but the first time I showed any interest in acting was when I was 4 years old, and, you know, someone was playing Mary in the Nativity play, and I thought it should have been me. So it started pretty early. And then all through, I used to spend my summer holidays when I was a kid going to do youth theatre and stuff. And then I eventually got into the National Youth Theatre. So then I spent every summer performing plays in London then. And then throughout university, throughout school, I was involved in extracurricular drama and stuff there. And then through uni as well, through all the drama societies and all of that, it was, you couldn't keep me away.
You were so driven. So when you saw that little girl, that four-year-old little...
She was terrible. She didn't deserve it.
I'm curious, was it her performance you didn't like, or the fact that she was on stage?
I remember feeling like there was something about her performance that wasn't convincing.
I see, she was just bad.
and feeling like there was something I can't remember exactly what it was, but there was something she was doing physically that I really didn't think was authentically telling the story, although I'm sure I wouldn't have said it in those words when I was four. But that's how I felt. I felt like...
It's interesting because, you know, for most kids, it would just be the attention.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it was in part to do with the attention. I mean, it's probably all to do with the attention when you're four. But it really, it felt more serious than that. Like there was a skill involved that she wasn't hitting the mark.
It is amazing. You were just like, what? I can do better than this.
Yeah.
What did they say? And I don't know if you told them at 4 years old, like, hey, Dad, I'm going to be an actress.
I don't know. They certainly encouraged my enjoyment of being in plays and all of that very much. But I remember there was a period through my teenage years, I guess I just assumed it wasn't really an option as a career. And so I tried to find other things that would suit the same attributes you might find in an actor. And I remember for a time saying, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a barrister. That's what I'm going to work in law and be a barrister. I mean, I couldn't think of anything worse now. I don't think I ever really believed it, but it was just sort of something that I latched onto as being a proper job that was an alternative. And then I guess, I don't know at what point for my family they realised that it was, or for me for that matter, I can't really remember when I decided that there was only one way I was going to go. I think it was probably in my heart for a long time before it was even expressed, you know. I guess getting into the National Youth Theatre and that sort of thing will have had a big impact. And then, you know, once you're into Lambda, you're definitely giving the career a go, the idea of a career a go, you know.
I'm always admirative of creative people who found their means of expression very early on and continuously created opportunities for themselves in their childhood and teenagehood to practice it.
Yeah, I loved it. I think the other thing was that I would, you know, I still say this about myself to a degree that I'm not, I never was an outgoing kid. Like I could often be outside of, you know, my group of friends or whatever. I could often be quite shy. And so I think I found... And this is, you know, this is a narrative that you hear over and over again, actors say, isn't it, that acting was a way of them expressing themselves. It's a cliche, but for me, I think it was true in that I suddenly found a way of being able to stand up in front of people and have people sort of listen to me and feel like I could hold their attention. And when you're a shy person, that's not something you're used to doing, really. And I still find that now. You know, if I've been asked before to do speeches at friends' birthdays or whatever it might be. And because you're an actor, they assume that that's very much something that comes easily to you, which I'm sure it does to many actors, but not all of us. And, you know, when I got married, I'd consider myself a feminist, but I didn't give a speech at my wedding because I was like, thank you, I'm happy to bow to tradition on this occasion, you know. So yeah, I think for me it was really an outlet of expressing myself. Yeah.
You would have no problem giving a speech if it was a character giving a speech, and
totally, yeah. And if there was a script or if I'd, you know, heavily workshopped who that character was and what their world was, you know, all of that is fine. It's a completely different thing. And it's quite hard, I think, for people to understand that.
Yeah, I think it's because actors use their own body to create. And it's probably very clear for the actor to know who is inhabiting the body right now. Is it the character or is it just them? Or is it the character pretending to be another character? Anyway, so on that same note, when you're approaching a role, are you looking for similarities between you and the character, or do you find that you want to transform into them?
I guess that totally depends on the character and the context. For sure, I think there are a lot of the time you're always going to bring elements of yourself. Your characters are always going to be in some way based on who you are because you're drawing from your own imagination and your own experiences as a, you know, as a human being in real life. For instance, in The Duchess, I was approached by by a duke who was talking to me and giving me lots of attention. And so I had to act.
That was the duke was played by Ralph Fiennes, right?
Yes, yeah. And so there wasn't really much acting that needed to be involved with that because, you know, there I am. It's my first ever job. And I'm in a shot just with Ralph Fiennes. And so I'm sort of starstruck as I'm acting. And similarly, I have to be this young girl in polite society that's being spoken to one-on-one by this powerful duke. So yeah, there can definitely be an overlap of your real life experience and your character's experience for sure.
And thinking about our listeners again, in the audition process, do you come in completely in character or do you like to bring as much a sense of self as much as possible?
I know a lot of actors like to walk into a room in character and that helps them then to do the audition in character. I personally feel sort of uncomfortable with it because it feels like I'm not then having an authentic conversation with whoever I'm meeting. So I prefer to sort of then click into gear when I need to, when I'm reading the material. But I think that's quite a personal thing. I think it's different for every actor. I think the most important thing is just to try and be as calm and confident and have done as much work and research as you possibly can, just be as prepared as you can, which will help you feel calmer and more confident in the room.
What do you do for that? Do you read books? Do you watch other films? Do you look at other actors?
Yeah, anything, all of the above. I remember when we were shooting The Duchess that Ralph Fiennes and I were sort of improvising this conversation between these two people. I clearly hadn't done my research on the period. And he asked me whether I was there with a chaperone. And I said, no, I was here on my own. And he went, really? No chaperone? And I was like, shit, obviously really messed up there. So yeah, I think it's always good to do your research around the context and around the period for sure.
Well, there you have it. In order to be an effective actor, you have to first tell the story. Thank you so much, Fiona, for doing this.
Well, it's my pleasure. I've really enjoyed myself. So thank you very much.
I hope you guys really enjoyed this conversation as well. If you'd like to ask a question to Fiona or me, it's not too late. You can always text us. Also, we are currently developing a series of courses, and one of them will be on acting, voiceover, and speech. We'll probably also have private workshops. So if this is something you'd like to hear more about, feel free to reach out. Next week, we are going to meet with Danielle Trissoni, author, novelist, and writer of Crypto Z. So stay tuned. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you guys next week.